Fine wee lass, a bonnie wee lass is bonnie wee Jeannie McCall. I give him a mother's engagement ring and a bonnie wee tartan shawl. I met her at the wedding in the cooperative hall. I was the best man and she was the belle of the ball.
I love it.
Anymore, I have to talk to my agent.
No, that was plenty, Ian. Thank you very much, man. I really appreciate you opening up the show that way. I know last minute, just jitters are told, asked. Was that a nice request coming from Gianluca? No?
Well, it was pretty early, so I'd do, you know. Thankfully for the internet, I was able to dig up some.
I was actually going to play a practical joke on you and say that it has to be Italian in origin.
But. No, no, we give a little bit of freedom here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I'm really grateful.
This is going to be good. What are we calling this show? What do we want to talk about? Affordable housing? Like, how do we want to talk about this?
Yeah, affordable housing is probably the byline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long have you been in that landscape?
Well, 25 years in affordable housing, but much, much longer for other types of development.
Yeah. Let me introduce you. So Ian Jones is here from BGI Group, www.bgigroup.ca is where you can find them. Yeah, his email is ian@bgigroup.ca. And then also we're going to be talking about the Joy concept.
Yes, please.
Which is www.myjoyliving.com. You can find them there. And then Gianluca, you want to share the deets for Contractors Guild?
Constructors
Guild.
No worries. So Constructors Guild, I am the head curator for the Constructors Guild, a community for those who build them. And you can check us out online at constructorsguild.com or find me on LinkedIn, Gianluca Pascale. And we also have a page for Constructors Guild on there as well.
And I forgot to mention that Ian Jones, you're all over LinkedIn as well too. So you can find it under the name Ian Jones.
It's Ian Jones, M-R-I-C-S.
What's the MIRS?
Member of the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors. I can let you know what that means.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
It'd be nice if we do, because I find it immensely important to the topic.
Oh, yeah. It is.
Let me do a quick shout out. I got Evan's t-shirt today on this show, Evan's Workshop. He's growing on social media. 15-year-old kid has been on the show 2 years ago, a little less than 2 years, and he's a woodworker, and he's loving the industry. And so he gave me a tee, and I'm wearing his shirt today. So
it's all good.
Yeah. I love it.
Hey, architects and builders, do you want to stand out from the competition? Fraser Wood Siding has your back. Fraser Wood Siding is a leader in pre-finished wood siding. They manufacture beautiful pre-finished wood siding using only the highest quality PEFC certified Canadian softwood. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors, supplied by the global leader in paints, Sherwin-Williams. Whether your design taste is classic, contemporary, conservative, or bold, they've got you covered. They'll gladly match the color of any paint manufacturer and send a sample on an actual piece of Fraser Wood Siding in just a few days. Visit their website at www.fraserwoodsiding.com and reach out about your upcoming projects to benefit from their industry-leading lead times. Fraser Wood Siding, get inspired. Looking for cutting-edge solutions for your spray foam needs? Look no further than Elastichem Specialty Chemicals. With a remarkable track record spanning over 3 decades, Elastichem stands as an industry-leading supplying contractors across Canada with top-grade closed-cell, open-cell, and specialty foam products and accessories. Experience hassle-free spraying in both summer and winter with Insulthane Extreme, Canada's groundbreaking HFO closed-cell product. Time is precious, and we know it. Optimize your efficiency and avoid downtime by choosing the best products with the best technical and customer support. Elevate your spray foam game today with Insulthane Spray Foam products by Elastichem. Give them a try today. Visit their website at www.elastichem.com or give them a call at 1-877-787-2436. This podcast is brought to you by Redmond Distributing, a proud family-owned and operated HVAC supplier, serving Ontario for the past 22 years. With warehouses conveniently located in both Mississauga and Ottawa, they specialize in providing premium HVAC and hearth equipment across the region. Redmond Distributing is committed to supporting HVAC businesses with their dedicated customer service, reliable warranties, free training sessions in their operational facility, inventory management, and free delivery to most locations in Southern Ontario. For a partnership with true HVAC equipment specialists, choose Redmond Distributing. Explore more at www.redmonddistributing.com. Contractors, it's time to empower your business with Shelta Tech implementation. Shelta is offering a free meeting to tackle your biggest pain points head on. Their goal, to develop a custom company app that's built just for you, solving your pain points, streamlining your processes, making your workday smoother. Here's the scoop. There's a $15,000 digital adoption grant available, and Shelta is an expert at helping you secure it. This isn't just funding, it's your stepping stone into a new era of digital efficiency. By your second meeting, you'll get a tailor-made company playbook, a software prototype designed with your input, project tracking, real-time budget management, and daily logs, all integrated into a single app. It's tech that works for you, not the other way around. Shelta isn't just offering tech, they're offering transformation. Join the community of 93 subcontractors who have already stepped up their game with Shelta Tech. Two meetings, countless opportunities, ready to make a move? Visit shelta.app. Let's pave the way to smarter, tech-driven future. Shelta Technology, custom tech solutions for the modern contractor.
Good. I want to begin the show by basically sharing, I guess, the provincial definition, how they look at affordable housing these days, regarding as the least expensive of one, a unit for which the rent does not exceed 30% of gross annual household income, or for low or moderate income households, or two, a unit for which the rent is at or below the average market rent or of a unit in the regional market area. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally.
Totally makes sense, right? And I think on your website, when I was looking at it, are we talking about currently right now, out of the 41 million Canadians that we have, 6 million of them are in this category? Or are they in the elderly category?
They're in the boomer category.
The boomer category. Yeah,
55 to 75 years old generation.
It's a big chunk of the population.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's growing, too.
Yeah.
Because we're living longer.
It'll be 25%, in about 10 years.
25% of the population?
Yeah.
What are we predicted to be at regarding, if we're 41 right now, what are we predicted to be at that point?
10 years, I think it's at least 45, because Ontario's gone from 14 to 20 million, I believe, in that same period.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a quarter of that population
is
going to be that boomer older.
Yeah. Now, again, keep in mind, whether they like it or not, the Gen X and millennials are moving into that generation.
Of course.
So, that 25% still applies 10 years from now, even though a lot of boomers will be leaving the planet.
Sorry, I interrupted. You were going to say something? No?
No, the stat is, are we still, these stats are provincial or Canada-wide?
This was the province of Ontario.
Okay, sorry. The 8 million is Canada-wide.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, it's contributing to the 41. So I'm dealing with the 41, right?
That's Canada.
Yeah, and we know that in the last year, we've had an increase of 1.3 million new people coming to Canada,
right,
which is a whole other discussion, not what we're going to have on this show. But normally, we've been averaging anywhere from, 300 to 500,000 new people coming into Canada on average.
For so long, it was 250 a year, and 100 came to Toronto. That was, bang, bang, bang. Just that lasted for I don't know how many years, but now it's mushroomed.
Tripled almost. We're doing 1.2, 1.3 over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
A million. It's easy a million in the last 3 years, a year and more.
Which I guess the idea is it's a hot topic. In construction or just across the country, affordable housing is a hot topic. Labor shortage is a hot topic. Everything is a lot of people are discussing it, but nobody's really doing something about it. That's what I get the sense of from looking from a distance, right?
A lot of talk.
That's the Canadian way, though. We're professionals at talking about nothing.
Bystanders?
Yeah. We are definitely bystanders and not participants.
At what point do we change? What is it going to take?
I don't know. If you look at the last 4 years alone, in the overall economic and political climate, it seems that we as Canadians are a glutton for punishment. And what's it going to take? I don't know. It seems that we can take a lot of punishment. The pendulum will swing, and there's going to be enough people where there's going to be a tipping point where people are going to start either vocalizing or possibly doing something about it, and by way of either presenting themselves, but that's a whole different topic in itself as well.
Ian, I'm just curious. I just want to ask, how young are you?
78.
78. And then you've been tackling this and discussing this particular topic for the last 2 decades, basically, plus.
Yeah.
how has it changed since you were in your late 50s to now?
Well, the values have skyrocketed, the construction costs have skyrocketed, so it becomes almost impossible to produce affordable housing. It gets talked about plenty, you know, but all of this is what I call baffle gap, you know, so it's basically, it needs an out-of-the-box answer, you know, and hopefully we'll get into that, because there is one.
My thought process is almost, is government doing the right thing?
Well, latterly, you know, it's the old story, how much do you throw against the wall and hope
and what some sticks? Of it sticks,
you know, because that's what they're doing right now, and it's actually, you know, it's actually trying to get re-elected. That's the bottom line of it. And all this stuff that they're putting out, you know, when you get right down to the grassroots, doesn't work. You know, because the feds are the answer, you know, and if they would have employed the MURBs from the 70s, and it's a tax incentive type of, you know, projects, they'd have had everything that they need, you know, the supply and everything, with the right apprenticeship programs and that. You know, but it's trickled down. You know, it's the municipalities that are the real control of the building permits. And they are like a Gordian knot. That's where the real problem comes in.
Are we okay? Or I think Ian needs to come a little closer. Or just bring the mic. You can bring the mic closer to you. That's it. Yeah, perfectly. So you can see where you're seated. It's fine. And I love that you brought that up because I agree with you on that. And I don't understand how we have such a nation where we've got our provinces, we've got our premiers, and we've got our territories, and then we got the federal. And it's almost as if it's two siblings that are just angry at each other, not speaking to each other.
That's right. You're absolutely right.
But the thing is, like, we all have to go to the family dinner. We all have to still communicate. We all have to contribute to clean the dishes, you know, to prepare the meal. Like, we all have to do that. So we can't ignore and continue fighting, squabbling, and the priority of being reelected should not ever be the priority at the top. It should always be at the bottom.
Doesn't work.
It doesn't work like that. But it used to work in Canada's history. It used to work.
You know, but, you know, and I use social media, just LinkedIn. You know, the others I don't have time for. You know, but the problem is that everybody's got an opinion. You know, so when you layer in the, you know, the NIMBYs, call them what they are. Some are genuine and, you know, I wouldn't like a 40-story building top of a bungalow type thing. But the point being is that it all boils down to one word, power. You know, and yeah, the ones that have the power don't want to give it up. You know, and that applies to each of the three levels of government and the activist residents.
So, of course, me being in my late 20s, early 30s, I didn't pay much attention to this, right? That wasn't my forefront thought process about where does the elderly, where do they go? Where are they going to be positioned? But then all of a sudden you get older, you start realizing you're getting closer to that than being further away from that. But then you also start paying attention to parents and friends of parents and it's just, it's right there. And you start, and I've seen the last two decades, just the increase of, I wouldn't say good affordable housing. I would say just a solution to affordable housing. Is it good? And my concern now is, and I think you went recently, you were at the Living Luxury show.
Yeah, on Sunday.
And, you know, Eden was there and they had, you know, that now it's, I'm starting to see a difference of using the term luxury affordable housing. And I don't understand that terminology. I just don't get that title. Like, I really, are you adding certain luxurious materials to label it a luxurious ADU? Is that what you're doing? Because I don't, if that's all you're doing, then that's not really luxury. You know, are you guys seeing the same thing?
Well, the luxury affordable housing, sorry, you can comment in a minute. That's basic. Okay. Let me just back up. What's out there right now is independent living and the retirement homes.
Yes.
The long-term care, different story.
Yes.
That's a quasi-hospital. You know, but the retirement homes are anywhere from 5,000 to 8,000 a month. The independent living doesn't have as much care. That's for independent, you know, people that are independent. They're 4,000 to 6,000 a month. And there's thousands, if not millions, of people cannot afford that. So that's where, you know, I'd like to chat on this.
No, for sure. We're going to get totally into the joy concept.
No, but that's the key.
Yeah.
You know, is coming up with a blend that's not high quality. It's medium quality for affordable pricing to tap into, to supply, you know, who needs that. They don't need the $8,000 a month with all sorts of marble bathrooms and all the rest of it. You know, they don't.
My concern is when I start seeing all this, I concern about the mental state of this segment of the population, what that does to the individual. Yeah. That's what I'm concerned about, really. And I don't think anybody's talking about that portion of it.
That's the elephant in the room, among the many.
And realistically, in two decades, my generation is going to be in that situation.
Right.
Right. Yes. So it's like you start to try to figure out, do I really want to be in that situation? Do I want to have that mental state as my morning, noon, evening? I don't want it. I don't want to be in that situation. I think there should be a lot of care, a lot more care given to that segment of the population.
There's a list, you know, and right up at the top is loneliness, just what you're touching on.
Yeah.
You know, and the province, you know, they were way behind with new long-term care homes. And that came really front and center during COVID, you know, with the deaths in them, et cetera. But what they were doing, they were taking a wing of hospitals. And because they weren't building long-term care, they were parking people in the hospitals at $1,000 a day or whatever it is these days. You know, and that... That was the real issue. You know, people that needed, you know, joy. They were stuck in hospitals. They were seeing people, you know, plugged in and, you know, all the rest of it. So that really goes into your mental aptitude.
It does.
So
what was the brainchild of this? Like, what was the spark and how far back are we talking about?
About 8 years. I did an initial sketch. We do our own in-house design, and then we hire the architects for the construction drawings. But about 8 years ago, my brother, who I love dearly and worked with me for 40 years, and he was basically in charge of the sites, and he had to have a quadruple bypass. And his wife and doctor, they decided he should be in a retirement home because he was 8 years older than me. And his mind was as clear as a bell. You know, so it took 9 months. He was stuck in that hospital for 9 months. And that's when I began to scratch my head. You know, why is this taking so long, you know? Because I'd never looked into it. So he got a bed in Brantford. And I visited him every week. And when I went in the front door, there was this gauntlet of seniors sitting in chairs and wheelchairs looking at the floor. When I left an hour later, same seniors looking at the same floor. You know, and I shook my head every time I left. He passed away about 12 months after being in there, and that's another story. You know, and the day I left, like, I've got a deep Christian faith. So the day that I left, I says, God, you've blessed me with over 50 years in this business. I'm going to do something about it. Mm. You know, so I dusted off what I'd done, you know, a few years before. My background is financial economics of... real estate development. So we just pulled and pushed and came up with what I called the joy concept. And it's to try to instill real joy into the residents that come into the building. That was the catalyst.
And you're seeing it now.
Yeah, because we were going to introduce it right before COVID, but when COVID hit, I said, pull it back. You know, no way we are trying to aim at 55 plus when a lot of people are dying in these places. But when, you know, when COVID ended, we immediately, you know, started getting into contracts. And in the last 12 months, we've got seven. And these are about 400 units per contract. And there's three in Ottawa, one in Belleville, one in PEI, one in Newfoundland, and one in Virginia. Because we were active in the US 204 to 208. So it's been really accepted, and you know, when you want, I'll give you more details of it, because we don't want these buildings. We don't need them, but we know how to produce them. Mm. So we build them in church land, excess land, and it's the church or non-profit as the end owner of the building. And we bring a big property management company, not us, who head leases the building, which takes the occupancy risk away from the church.
Yeah.
They get ownership of the building, they get all the equity build up, and they get the cash flow each year, you know, net cash flow, etc. But we source the sites, we get them approved, we design them, get them approved, build them. And these days, we did our own construction management for 40 years, but we're retaining local construction management companies now to do it, and we overview them, you know, because we know exactly what they do. Mm-hmm. And that's how we'll be producing them. And most of these seven are in the city approvals right now. And I'd love to say we're getting a permit next week, but it's probably a good year from now that we'll be getting the permits.
That's a whole other discussion about
yes. The
process that was supposed to be streamlined. Supposed to be streamlined.
It's worse.
It's actually gotten worse.
It's worse.
I think what happened was during the streamlined concept ideas of COVID, I'm not pointing fingers directly at the building departments or individuals that worked there. They just became lazier.
And let me just touch on that. The building departments are great because you walk in with a complete set of drawings and specs, you know, and the plans.
But it's the process of jumping through all the hoops.
It's the planning.
Yeah.
You know, that's the 3 and 4 year stuff, the planning departments, because there's at least 20 consultant reports you have to submit. They then get reviewed. They get peer reviewed, which you pay for, obviously. You know, so that's all what drags out the process, and it's not cheap.
But then you had a premiere where he had a speaker box talking about, we're going to streamline this, we're going to speed this up, this is what's slowing down the process, and none of that happened. Sure enough, like, it just didn't happen.
It's gotten worse. They continuously offloaded the liability onto developers or contractors. They just switched the tables around, right? They got the money, switched the tables around, offloaded the liability.
People sitting in chairs that are staring at the floor.
It's this whole process. It's terrible. It really is. And just to compare, the project in Virginia that we've got, the application fee in Brampton for 650 units of affordable rental, the application fee, not the building permit, is $320,000. In Virginia, it's $600. Because they want it. They roll out the red carpet, you know.
You can't make this shit up, man. I'm telling you.
Wow.
Can you say that?
Yeah, you can totally swear on this one. Yeah, we're not governed by anybody. So, I mean, how do you justify that? I'm sure you've spoken about that to them and explained that we've got the same project being built south.
It doesn't matter. You know,
it doesn't matter. That's what they're charging.
It's the one word, power. You know, and what you just touched on, you know, the province, they actually, with their Bill 23, they laid out there was going to be penalties for planning departments if they didn't process stuff.
I thought that's not happening until the next election, right?
It's worse because the planning departments have said, oh, yeah, we'll show you, you know, how we can avoid that. And what they did is they, instead of one pre-consultation, initially, it's now two, and you have to have all of those reports I described done, and back in, and all of them finished with. Then the meter starts with the planning department, and the issue it and avoid the penalties.
Games.
So you're all ready to go if you wanted to break ground and start building this.
Basically, yeah, CMHC funding, etc. So these are still subject to, you know, CMHC, but we've had that before in the big one we did in Brampton. 20 odd years ago when we started this whole thing, you know, it really is terrible.
And you're just watching this unfold. It's almost like a slow car crash, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I could have shown you basically when you have the pre-consultation, within a couple of weeks, they give you this list of reports that are required. There's about 60 boxes on the list, and depending what the project is, they check the boxes that they need for your specific project, okay? So, you know, I'm not saying the whole 60 would ever be, you know, checked, you know, but let me just, then I'll take a rest. Let me tell you the one thing that, and a lot of developers get tripped up in it until they find out. Most sites that are anywhere near conservation areas, etc.
That's a whole other different.
They require an environmental impact study. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you do not have that consultant retained in March so that they can check the spawning ground and breeding ground, your report cannot be completed
until the following.
So there's 1 year, you know, just on that item alone. Well, thankfully, we've found out that the consultant, he can do the on-site survey. You know, in any, as long as that's done, he can finish the report within a couple of months. So once bitten, twice shy.
How did you guys, you connected through LinkedIn, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long ago when you first met him?
I'd say probably August or September of last year.
Okay.
Roughly.
Just before your meal. See, yeah, I told you, you mentioned food, then I'll be.
That's right. Ian was at my inaugural Moai dinner that okay. Constructors Guild hosts every month.
Yep.
And he's actually been at several more afterwards, and he's done a lot more things for me since, and I'm immensely grateful for him.
You're welcome.
So, Ian, do you want to walk us through? Because then I've got a bunch of questions that I will ask you, but do you want to walk us through?
Yes, please. Yeah. And we'll go through it quite quickly. You know, sure. This obviously goes without saying, so, okay.
It is, totally.
It's the silver bullet everybody's looking for, the affordable housing. You know, and nobody can seem to answer it, okay? Okay, and this specifically, what we're dealing with, we can't, answer it for everybody, but I'll touch on that. But again, you know, these buildings will be designed to last for 50, 80 years, etc. So Gen X and millennials are right behind, you know. So that just underlines the problem. The government waiting list for affordable housing is 2 to 10 years.
2 to 10 years.
Yeah.
That's currently right now, yes. As of now.
Yes. And they're all up in the 5 to 10 range. We just included the two. Massive demand, as I mentioned.
Yeah, so 55. I'm just going to, because more people listen on the audio than the video.
Okay.
So that's why. So the massive demand, the boomer generation, is 55 to 75. Canada has 8 million plus on that. US side has 70 million in the market there. The independent living locations at 5,000 to 7,000 per month expenses across Canada and US.
Right. Okay.
Wow.
Okay, what can be done to change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete? And that quote goes back to the famous architect Buckminster Fuller in 1960. Okay. And in the catalyst, I mentioned that before, you know, like, as I say, I've got a deep Christian faith. That's what drives me daily, mm-hmm. You know, and I try and walk it. Okay. And now here's the specific solution that we're proposing. As I say, we've dubbed it the Joy Concept, and what it is a boutique-style wellness residences, affordable rentals designed for 55 plus, and that's the website, myjoyliving.com.
Can I just ask you, Ian, like, I'm 52, 3 years away from 55. I've got my perception of what a 55-year-old was when I was a kid, but I've got my perception of what a 55-year-old is today, and is it important to be that low? Are we getting more people needing the assistance at that early age?
Okay, from a development point of view, you try and widen your market to the widest without getting outside it, you know, and that is the defined boomer generation, 55 to 75. So the whole brand and marketing and everything is aimed, you know, entirely at that. But it's not restricted to that. Under the charter, we cannot prohibit. In the States, you can, you know, 55 plus, but not here. So you have to rent to, you know, anybody.
Yep.
If they want to live with 55 to 75, basically.
I was just curious. Okay, so we'll go back to the Joy Concept here.
Okay. And this specifically is what it is. It's an affinity-based hybrid apartment building blended with a light independent living furnished model, providing a boutique hotel-style ambience and wellness experience at an affordable price from $1,300 a month. And one of the reasons for that $1,300 a month is it taps into the waiting list, you know, because their government pension is about $1,700 or $1,800, and You know, so yeah, this is that's above 30%. But if they've got families and the church here actually can provide assistance, mm-hmm. you know, like to make sure that works. So the point being is from a marketing point of view, this model can tap into the waiting list in addition to the people that can't pay the $5,000 a month. Okay. These are the five key points, and if you don't mind, I'll just rattle sure. through them. The first is turnkeyed only to local charities or non-profits for their 100% end ownership on stabilization. In other words, again, we don't need these buildings, we don't want them. 5 to 9 story, because if we go to 10 story, the high rise regulations kick in, and that makes the building more expensive and okay. drives the rents up.
Okay.
Okay. And there's 120 to 200 residents per building, depending, obviously, on the number of floors. From day one in 2018, I says these buildings are going to be have passive house specs. And this was before it was, again, the flavor of the month.
A trend. Yeah.
But what it does is it's it reduces the utilities by about 80 to 90%. It's triple glazing, beefed yep. up insulation, etc. And that... That benefits the end owner of the building because, you know, it provides more net operating income
yeah.
to do what they want to do yeah. with their programs. And again, there's a studio, 1, 2, 3, 4 bedroom. The studios are furnished and the 1 and 2 bedroom is optional furnished. We nickname it compassionate capitalism because it's a not-for-profit project by a for-profit developer. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been for profit for decades. And basically what happens is we bring 100% of the financing, so the non-profit does not have to. The project does produce profit, but we do not take it out. The equity that we put into it, let's say CMHC's loan is 90%. We put in the other 10%. But when the building's turned over, we don't take it out. We leave it on title as a second mortgage at zero interest and zero principal payments for 10 years. And that makes the first mortgage that much more financeable.
Yeah.
Okay? So those are the main items that we feel are the attraction to this this model. Okay? That's we've got about 4 different designs, and these are ours. We do these internally. And this, by far, is the best producing revenue and, therefore, the best financeable model. And that is the, you know, what I'll say is the new form of a church. You know, like a church is supposed to be really outreach into the community.
Community.
Not just yeah. sitting there on a Sunday, et cetera, et cetera. And all of the ones that have committed thus far, they say, I love it. That's what we should be doing more of, you know.
What are we looking at there? That's 20,000 square feet. So how many units are in there? Is that a 100 or 200 in between?
The community hub, the 2-story thing is the 20,000 feet. The okay. The 9-story building is, I don't know if they mentioned it to you. There's the zoning units, which is around 200. And there's the CMHC, the way they do it is about 300. And I'll just mention right now, the difference is we've designed about 40 to 50% as the CMHC affordable.
Okay.
And they're co-living units. You know, not everybody's going to like them, but if you want a really nice furnished place at $1,300 a month, we'll show you what they get. Okay. That's what they get. You know, our interior designer, you know, like she's done hotels. We've done 5-star hotels, the Hilton down Toronto, the Hyatt downtown Toronto, and the Prince Hotel uptown. So this is the sort of, you know, and that's included in our budget, you know.
Yeah. Right? And again, so that's your starting from 1,300.
Yes.
Wow.
And the next one? It's the same. And if you look at the picture on the left, the bathroom has mm-hmm. got a freestanding shower, so it can take a wheelchair
yep.
if it gets to that point.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what it looks like. That's the co-living unit. So there's three separate studio units. They're big, you know, like 20 by 20 type thing, furnished. And they also have a living room, dining room, which shows there, mm-hmm. where the three can get together for meals if they want. And let me just mention meals. When we started this, you know, like one of the things I said to our guys is, you know, one thing that these are not going to have is a main floor institutional dining room. You know, because if for someone I can't stand, you know, it's, you know,
it's time 12
o'clock lunch, yeah. 5 o'clock dinner, and if it's Tuesday, it must be meatloaf we're having.
Yeah.
You know, I say, forget that. You know, like, that's why these have, every three units have got their own living room. Sorry. So it gets better. You know, the built-in community hub, you know, providing the purpose for the residents and services for that and the local community. And we've designed in a clinic and a pharmacy in each, if it makes sense, location-wise.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. You don't need to read this, but that's everything that a community hub, you know, would be able to provide with the 20,000 square feet that we'd provide. Okay. And that's the two big things that Joy does. It provides affordable housing and it enables community outreach programs. Okay. Can this be done?
I was just thinking that.
That's the seven contracts in the last 12 months. And most of them are in at the city pre-consults. What we do is we do about 150-page feasibility study to give to the church board, if you like. We do that in 30 days. We then give them 30 to 60 days to mull it over. And if they like what they see, they give us the okay to do the second report, which is getting the project into the city. And that's where most of these are right now. They've passed the first stage. We're into the second, and as soon as the city says, yeah, we like what we see here, it goes into CMHC.
Can I, Ian, ask a really stupid question?
No. Good.
Is there a lot of gatekeeping on this because it's too good and it doesn't reflect what everybody else is doing?
That's actually a great question.
Well, a lot of people, when they hear it and see it, they say, can't be right, can't be true. How can
but I'm possibly? Seeing it, though. I'm seeing how it can be true.
The next slide.
And it's not the way that this is done. So right. I'm wondering, you're rocking the boat because it's been done a different way for so long. And whether there's profit or whatever that's going on in those situations, you come along and present this, and they start to push you down, slow you down, to prevent you from coming in to change the...
Now, we've got all of the pressure that's coming down in municipal councils right now, you know, by their voters. We need affordable housing. We need retirement. You know, so if it could be perfect timing, which I believe there is, now's the time.
Yeah.
You know, because of what's happening out in the market, you know, and the rents are shooting up, blah, blah, blah. And there's this. And a lot of developers won't do this because they ain't going to leave their profit and equity sitting for 10 years. Chances are I won't be around, but my son's right behind. He's been with BGI for 20 years, and he's in the exact same wavelength.
Nice. You were going to say the next slide?
Yeah. Yeah, he was the regional manager of Gideon's Canada for Ontario for a few years, so you know he thinks the same way. Anyway, and we've done it before. And this is what I was mentioning. You know, and it's just in us. Make no little plans. They have no passion to stir men's and women's, I added that, blood. Probably will not themselves be realised. That goes back to 1907. So our Day Spring project in Brampton, we took 30 acres of church land. We rezoned it, official plan, et cetera, et cetera. And the bottom line is what we got the approvals for, 700 condos. 160-bed long-term care, church and retail. Next. And that's just what I said there. So, next. That was our original vision. You know, that's our master plan of the 30 acres. And the next one, that's it today. As a matter of fact, the last building's finished. So that's the 700 condos. Over to the right is the 160-bed long-term care. That's just phase one of the church. And at the bottom where you see the parking lot and the grass to the right of it. That's the one we've submitted to Brampton for 650 affordable rental units. And we're halfway through that process. But we're not going to build it. It's not a joy project. So we'll do an RFP to other developers or REITs, etc., and they're welcome to build it. And when that happens, we take those proceeds from the land sale, build the 1,000-seat main sanctuary, which is the last phase of the church, and then we're done with that project. That's a joy project. The only difference is that's condo. Joy is rental.
So what do we need to change here?
Well, as I say, we sort of nickname this compassionate capitalism, you know, and what really drives it is the fact that, you know, again, we don't need the buildings or want them, but the financial structure that we're structuring, we'll leverage the second mortgage up to 50%, and that creates the equity to build the next joy building.
Yeah.
So
it's ongoing.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know, that probably doesn't answer your question, because there's not a lot of developers who do this. Some will, hopefully. And the ones that will, we'll license the copyright, which we registered in Canada and the US, for others to do the same thing.
See, here's the other stupid question that I have, is I think that in Canada, shouldn't there be a rule where for every developer that's building whatever they're building, they're tall condos or whatever, and they keep on growing them in Toronto and other cities across Canada, they should contribute to building a joy.
Totally agree.
Sure.
Definitely. You can build as many towers as you want, but every one that you put up, you build a joy.
Totally
build
agree.
Build another one, build another joy.
Another way to say that is, among these 60 check boxes that need to be done, one of them is parklands, right?
Yeah.
So it's the
or
same.
Even do a 1 in 4, because if we're predicting our that population wanting this as affordable housing being in 10, 20 years or whatever, 25%. So every 4 that you build one joy.
Yeah. So
and we have a lot of developers
so
here.
So what needs to change is mindset. Ian is rubbing up against it. We're all rubbing up against this is how we've always done things is one of them. The other one is it's not possible. But the not possible is because they're using that same lens of having done things the same way time and time again and now expecting different results. You know, I forget what the quote was, but the quote on doing things differently are, I've said this on this program and I never tire of sharing it again and again, is the fact that our industry keeps doing the same things over and over again, expecting different results, which is the definition of insanity.
Insanity, yeah.
It's time. If what needs to change? Well, mindset. We need to change as individuals. We need to change as governments, and we need to change also as neighbors. You know, these NIMBYs need to get off their high horse and start realizing that any day now, they're going to be one of the statistics wanting something like this.
Is it because the people that are making the decisions to do this or approve it will never be in this situation where they need it?
Yeah, a lot of seniors are staying in their own homes. And again, that doesn't bother me because we don't need them all. You probably find, if you did a survey, that most NIMBYs are comfortably ensconced in their own homes, mortgage free.
Yes,
you know, and they really need to know that once they get past 75 and stuff begins to creak, and they start looking at this sort of stuff. If they sell their house, and let's just take $1 million sale, I know a lot of Toronto's more than that now. If they go into a retirement home, they're out of money in about 12 years. If they go into joy, with the $1,300 a month, and it's still going to be that for the next 2 years, our profit just comes down gradually. That's what happens.
Yeah.
Then they're in there for a good 20 years, and they've got about $300,000 left over for their family. The other option, there's nothing left. If they go into a $5,000 a month place.
Yeah, you're going to run out of... Yeah. The race is not going to be won in your favor.
Right.
Simple as that.
And people are living longer. So there is going to be a major issue.
Well, right now, what is it? Currently, I think men are at 86 and women are at 88 or something.
Yeah, I don't know if men last that long. We always die off early. Right?
No, we're obviously earlier, but I'm hearing anywhere from early to mid-80s is where the average Canadian is living to.
Yeah.
So if you're retiring or whatever, you're you know, in your 70s or what have you, you still have a good chunk of time that you have to take care of.
Along with the change of mindset also at the decision makers level is what I'm, my observation, and Ian, please feel free to corroborate or prove me wrong, is the fact that a lot of the people that have a seat at the table where they can make decisions are not understanding it. They don't have the capacity to understand what the power of this as a clear example. And with that, they're also worried. That's one side. They're also worried about trying to appease to too many people, which is the typical political thing to do, right? And these types of decisions are where we find ourselves as an industry and in society today. There needs to be some very difficult and for some uncomfortable decisions to be made in order to prosper moving forward.
I don't see them coming. I really don't. You know, the way I describe it is they've painted themselves into a corner and placed the Gordian knot at the door. You know, this thing isn't going to...
So having said that, if they have, which I concur, they have painted themselves into a corner. I mean, what other choice do you have now of not accepting the fact that you're going to have to accept making this very difficult decision? You may piss off a handful or many, but what choices do we have? If we first and foremost don't take care of our elderly, our veterans, you know, the people that blaze the trail ahead of us, and then start worrying for ourselves, like you and I, I'm the same age as you, I'm 52, but also with the mindset that there's other people behind me, millennials, Gen Z, Gen Y, and the other generations, that mindset that can then be passed along. And if anything, it'll evolve, it'll get better, right? This is the mindset that we need right now, today.
The main problem is it's the votes. You know, I mean, the councillors, every 4 years, they have to, 2 years in, they have to start courting, you know, the votes for the next election. So they're paranoid about doing anything that's out of the box that offends, the electorate. You know, so that's the start of it. But when you take that and combine it with the planning department process, and just quickly, our first development was in 1980 at 1246 Yonge Street. We took a gas station and rezoned it for a 50,000-foot mixed-use building. It took 4 months to get a building permit, rezone and get a building permit, and it was 4 reports. And we built it in 10 months and, you know, off and running. You know,
that was 1980?
Yeah, and now Toronto is tracking average 32 months to do exactly what he just said, just for, to get it through the city.
And try deleting one of those reports. They're even adding to them. The new one is a phosphorus study. And seemingly phosphorus is in everything. Who knew? You know, so that's another study that has to get done. If anything you're doing trickles down into the groundwater, et cetera, and carries phosphorus with it, you know. So that's, they keep thinking, maybe we should add this one. And it all gets down to liability. You know, the city liability, they're not pushing back, you know, because that protects the city further from lawsuits.
I just keep thinking that, like, I'm going to just say, I think Ontario is probably the most corrupt province out of this whole country, where there's a lot of opportunity to take advantage of situations, because I've seen buildings bypass a lot of stuff and question, how did this get approved, when it's clear as day you're looking at something and you're like, that shouldn't have been approved, but it's been approved and it's gone there. And then when you come across with this joy concept, which makes a lot of sense, but it doesn't fit the mold. So it's like you're going to be left on the back burner for a while, because you've got other bigger fishes, so to speak, that have financial incentives to move forward.
Poll, lobbyists,
yeah,
all of that jazz.
Yeah. So just because they have deeper pockets, right? And that's where I was going with about the people that are making the decisions to move things like this, which should be moved forward, they don't ever see themselves being a part or an attendee of these situations. They'll never have to book a room or purchase a unit to be there, because they'll have enough wealth to take care of themselves and their whatever property they have, right? First, second, third, fourth, sure, cottage. So it's like out of sight, out of mind is what I'm trying to get at with that, which is unfortunate, because public sector, people that we voted in or they stole, doesn't matter, they should be looking at the public first. And what's the real problem here? Not the wealthy. And what's their real problem?
That should be the very simple definition of what a politician should be doing when they are given or voted in, be it at municipal, provincial, or federal for that matter.
See, they've got a voracious appetite for taxis. You know, so if they build 140-story or 50-story condos, they're getting, property taxes out of each one of them. So, you know, there's argument against sprawl, some good, some bad, you know, but in my opinion, they're ruining downtown Toronto, you know, like, because there's a better way. And I've, you know.
They're going to continue to ruin it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to get, it's not, in your opinion, you know, like when, at what point, because you've been in the game for so long, when were things being done properly? Building wise, this is just.
Well, and David Crombie, when he was mayor in the mid 70s, he brought in CR zoning, that commercial residential. And basically, what that said, and he says, if you want to build an office building, we'll allow you to build more density if you include residential. And that's why in the 70s and 80s, you had so many, some looking a bit strange, you know, 10 floors of office and 10 floors of condominium sitting on top of it.
Yeah.
There's loads of them downtown. And that was the time, as I say, in 1980, we got a permit and rezoning in 4 months. So everything was working really well, in my opinion, back then. And, in the building departments, and nothing, there's no computers. You know, it was just so streamlined and simple. But as they layered on all of these additional reports and everything, it just got worse and worse as the years progressed to where we are now. And I don't know what the answer is.
I want to highlight the fact that, you know, let's set aside the reports that have been added on since the early 80s. The fact that Ian just shared that process was done by pen and paper. You didn't mention it that way, but essentially that's what it is because there was no computers.
Yeah.
So let's think now as to the marketing ploy that came out when they introduced computers to the masses, that it was going to make our life easier. Come on, that's clear. A clear example. I can come up with a whole bunch of
you're hiding behind the cloak, right? And that's where, the current government is just continuously hiring more people to continue to create more problems.
The feds.
Yeah, the Fed is Canada's largest employer. Truth, bigger than Loblaws, and that's the second biggest.
As business owners, you not look at like everybody has to have a purpose, their task, their duty, what they need to get done. You don't need redundancies. So you don't need 10 people doing one task.
Well, the fact that we're not getting anywhere with affordable housing, with the labor shortage, which et cetera, is proof that we have too much redundancy.
I've got a couple of answers, nothing to do with this.
Just turn your mic a little bit.
Ian. Sorry, I've got
just that you could just turn the mic itself, yeah.
I've got a couple of answers, if anybody listens. And one is the planning process that I described. And this list, the planners know that they're going to want at least 10 reports of that 40 or 50. You know, so if they agree with developers that, look, you know, before you make your application at all, you know we're going to ask for these 10 reports. So the developers come in from day one to get, you know, and they have them done, you know, the day that they put the application in. So that could potentially lop 6 months off because the consultants need months to do these reports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if there is only another 5 to 10 reports that need to be done when the planners really look at it, that's all that you're dealing with. So you're at least shaving that time off by pre-doing them. It's along the lines of what the feds are talking about, the pre-designing homes, you know, that type of thing. So there is an answer there, and it's not AI. You know, you can't, you know, this AI streamlining and the province shoveling money at them.
I get the sense right now that anybody that's trying to tackle this problem is just grasping at straws of anybody that's a good salesperson.
Yeah.
The way they're presenting certain ideas.
Yeah.
Whether there's sound advice behind those ideas, that's the question that I start bringing up.
And it's not. That's what I'm saying. Most of this is vote getting. you know, both feds and provincial. But the other thing is, you know, instead of all these towers, and it's a bit late, every artery in Toronto that's four lanes with two parking lanes, what I would suggest doing is delete the two parking lanes. Take the four that's there and delete one of them. And all of those deletions can create wider sidewalks and patios and bike lanes, separate bike lanes. Every place along there, instead of two times density, do it citywide to increase it to six or eight times density. And that's a gift, if you like, to the developers on the basis that the first level underground is paid municipal parking to replace the street parking.
How do you do that when their mandate is to only accomplish 1.5 parking spots per unit of each of those towers? So you're already in a shortfall regarding parking spaces. So basically that's been done to avoid people from actually driving this, the core. They want people to either cycle, public, or pedestrian.
Right.
And I've always been an advocate about, you cannot eliminate one. You have to accommodate all. But so I like your idea of putting three instead of four, making the sidewalks bigger, because any other city that you go and visit, sidewalks are larger.
Right.
For a purpose.
Right.
But our sidewalks are next to nothing.
Right.
And then regarding the cycle lanes, sure, the cycle lanes make sense, but you have a city that you should design those cycle lanes to make sense.
And that's, right? that's basically what I'm saying. If I was to draw this, I would show you, you know, how it can work. And that middle of the three lanes, the middle one is the left turn lane, you know, like to keep everything moving. But the first level below grade, you know, they wouldn't lose any revenue. That would be paid municipal parking. And traffic studies are done as one of the reports, you know, as to how many for that specific building would be needed, you know. So it can be done if it's a big city-wide grand vision. And they did it with employment lands. And they're now, they've shot themselves in the foot big time, because you cannot convert office buildings unless you rezone them.
I just because it came out, I'd like for us whenever you feel like it, to talk about commercial office building conversions. That is definitely, sure. It's a hot topic.
For sure, because I can only assume because of the pandemic that there was massive losses there, right? And now back in the, would have been the 90s where there was church conversions going on? Like people were just... they were just converting all kinds of churches in different communities because people were not attending them.
Oh, yeah.
So they, right. But I had the problem about, they were converting them to luxury condo units.
Now, that was a big push.
Yeah. Like it was motivated by profit.
Yes.
That was the nasty thing. It should have been designed more along the lines of this.
Yeah.
Because you've got this space in the city. And yeah, I mean, now you've got the commercial issue, right? So now you've got a lot of units that are empty. And they should be converted, and they're easily able to convert them.
We'll both touch on this, but I want to preface something. There is a preconceived notion that it is easy. It is not. It is very costly, and there's a lot of work to it. And it is my opinion, Ian can share his, most of them would not be profitable, by which therefore means it's not worth doing.
Okay, so I guess let's get to the point of, like, what is the exact definition of profitability when it comes to building and development? Because I get the sense that with Joy Concept, it's eventually going to be profitable, but it's going to be not to the speed of what a typical developer is looking at.
Well, that's where condos come in, you know, because, yeah, you might take 4 years to get it approved, but if it's 2 to 3 years and it's up and you close all the deals, you know, you're gone. You know, and a typical condo, I don't know about others, but our benchmark was if you start your pro forma with 25% profit and you come out the other end with 10%, it's been a success.
Yeah.
You know, because of all of the hits you take all the way through. You know, so, it's all profit driven, you know, and it's just me, but, you know, how many pairs of shoes do you need? I've got three. I think that's enough.
The question I would have for you as it relates to the profit is, what is the reality? I mean, you said from 25 to 10 would be I'm going to reward it would be a complete and utter success. But what's the reality out there from 25 down to what, that's why two or three?
Yeah, that's why you see the receiverships kicking in.
So having said that, there's the other preconceived notion that that's out there that they say, oh, developers make a ton of money. If they're lucky, we just heard it from one of them. If they're lucky, they can pull out 10 points.
It depends. You know, I mean, where you are in the cycle. You know, like if you've pre-sold everything and you can be up and out, you know, before it starts the down cycle, they're laughing all the way to the bank.
So people have crunched the numbers on the commercial side and you can't convert these into residential spaces because it's just, I guess, the conversion itself to make the logistics of each unit work properly is too expensive. It's actually more expensive to do that than is to actually erect a new building and a new lot.
Well, yeah, just with what you last said there, you know, like, because you have to strip everything out, right down to the bare concrete. New windows, new walls, new M&E, blah, blah, blah. You know, so if you go right down to that, if you run the numbers, it's almost better to demolish the structural frame and start anew. Wow. So, you know, and Gensler, the big architectural firm in the States, they did a nationwide study, and their study says there's only 20% of vacant office buildings that would even begin to make sense.
So what's the alternative here? You're going to leave all this vacant space?
This is where it's going to get interesting. There's a big there's a big storm brewing, you know.
Are the owners of these buildings hanging on to them, hoping one day some developer's going to come along and I'll buy it, demolish it, build and erect a much taller condo unit?
And that is probably the solution, you know, is to make them residential. But the city needs to do a blanket citywide bylaw, getting this employment lands out of the way. The employment land zoning that's in place right now, if you demolish an office building to build a condo, you have to replace the office somewhere else. The same amount of space, which ain't going to happen.
See what Why I mean? Do you have to replace the same amount of office space that's vacant?
Because when they put it in place 10 or 15 years ago, it was jobs. The city has to have so
many. Nobody's working there now.
I know, but that's why they have to change it.
I agree. However, let's not forget, because this is multifaceted, right? One of the facets that we must not forget is that it may just be my opinion, but I feel that there is going to be a percentage of the work from home that are going to come back. Like that is not all of that is going to be permanent.
Yeah.
And we've already started seeing that by way of, I'll pull in the city. There's still planning people that work in the planning department that are working from home. And that is, if you can see the effects of that in how slow, how things came to a grinding halt.
Yeah.
I don't understand how people can still work from home and that the culture of the,
because they weren't working. That's the problem.
But getting granular, though, the ones that are coming back, are a lot of them, and generalizing, which I don't like to do, are coming back into the trophy buildings that are being redone, like you see here. It's the B and C buildings that are in a big problem.
Big pinch, yeah.
You know.
So would that be the new parking lot from the 90s, where when you went around the core, all you saw were little parking lots everywhere that would be fully, you know, taken over by the nightlife? And then all of a sudden, one by one, gone, piles, condo within a year or two. Is that what's happening? These commercial dwellings, these buildings are now going to be that parking lot version of it, of today?
It could be, but in the same breath, there's now 60 condo projects that have been
canceled. Just came out
indefinitely
before.
You know, so nobody knows what's for the next 5 years or so.
And the reason why, and again, thank you, Manny, that these conversations are important is because one of the things that's making things difficult for progress to happen is that the public is being ill-advised, ill-informed. They're getting ideas that are just not sound, not doable. By having these conversations, the education's free flow, it goes out, and they're able to get the information from the source, which is where this type of information should be coming from. But it seems like our professionalism keeps getting discounted in the construction industry.
Everyone knows on this show I'm not a fan of the feds. And I think that what's happening is that the feds are designing a path for where Canada is going to be in the future. And when I say path, I mean that as a child that we were in a box, we were in a classroom, right? And that box converted to high school. That high school turned into post-secondary. That post-secondary converted into a job placement. And then we stayed in that box for the majority of our career of a job. And then eventually you get to retirement and now you're put into a box. And it's amazing to see what you have building here, because that's not a box in my opinion. I've been to the dwellings because my mom is in there, right? And those are boxes. I can't stand it, right? I personally have no interest to ever be in one of those boxes, right? So it's like the federal government today, the way they're running things is they're just moving people from box to box to box to box until you get into the final box, right? And I though that's not a life, right? And I remember my very first house that I was building, there was an amazing gentleman, a beautiful gentleman who was in his early 80s, and he would always walk by the job site just to say hello. And I, you know, I started speaking with him and having some conversations with him. And then I just asked him, why do you always just walk every morning? And he would just say to me, he goes, if I don't walk, they plant me. He wanted to stay active. And we know like Jacko's way of looking at life as you get older. Like, you know, he just talked about how, you know, lift weights, go for a run, stretch out, eat good, stop drinking. Pretty straightforward. Be active. But when you got a government that's moving people from box to box until your final box, they really are showing they don't care. And the people that are making money, they're the ones that are, they're listening to them, which is unfortunate because they should be listening to yourselves. You know what I mean? They should be listening. Like there should be this, like I go back to the 4-to-1 ratio. For every tower you want to build and make a lot of money from it, you have to build a Joy Comfort. You have to.
And that's compassionate capitalism.
Yeah. But right now it's just Canada's capitalism.
Sure.
That's all it is, right? And you, everyone sees it. But like we said, did we say it on mic or off the mic? It's just everyone's just standing by. They're bystanders. Nobody's really speaking loudly to start changing things.
You know, and I honestly, I mean, the guys that make multi-millions, you know, I wouldn't even comment on them. But, you know, it'd be nice if there was a cap and stuff like that. You know, and I don't know if, you know, horrendous taxes or whatever. That's not the answer because what they do with the taxes isn't that great either. You know, but try spending $50,000 a month on yourself. You know, you'd end up £400. You know, you just don't need it.
Yeah.
You know? But that's just me.
No, it's not just you. I think it's lots. I think there's plenty of Canadians that feel the exact same way. We've seen a country change, not for the better.
And that's, we're giving them the opportunity because as soon as you go on our Joy website, the first thing that hits you in the face is you can be part of this. And we've registered with, I think it's Canada Gives or Canada Helps, one of them. So any donations come in, we don't get a penny. They come in and Canada Gives issues the charitable receipts and directs them to whatever church is needs the initial funds to get it off the ground. Because we don't say to the church, you don't have to put anything in. There's about $100,000 which they get back.
Yeah.
But we want them with, I hate skinning the game, but that's for us.
So this Canada Gives or Canada Helps is 100% of that money is distributed.
They take 3%, right? Yeah,
but we still don't, at 97. Yeah. Look at other other charities out there.
Okay, here's my dream. Mackenzie Scott or somebody like her comes in and says, "I love this. Here's your money to build it, and I don't need a dime of CMHC funds." That's the dream. I could produce these by the dozen.
Okay, so it's out there now. You know, this is the beauty of the internet, right? This is permanent now. Once Manny posts this, it's not going anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
So I will, as I do a lot for myself, for Manny, for the cause, for our industry, I'm going to do everything I can to take this specific episode and fan it out and start speaking loudly.
That would be great. Thank you. You know, but that's the real strength in this whole thing. Because right now I have to depend on, you know, whatever, BMO, CIBC, which we used before, you know, with CMHC insurance, and this is the plodding way to do it. But if there was large-scale donations that went in, for every dollar of donation, I can reduce the construction loan by that dollar. So the higher the donations get, and I don't need the, you know.
So to play on that 4-to-1 for the developers, what if it was 4-to-1 for the big banks? For every 4 deals that they do, one of them they have to do a Joy Concept deal as well.
Yeah, it'd be nice. You know, I don't mind going through the rigorous process and everything. And as I say, I'm a quantity surveyor. They hire quantity surveyors to check all the numbers monthly.
We've heard the following said from all three levels repeatedly. It's all hands on deck. Well, if it's all hands on deck, with the last hour we've been talking, allowing 10 minutes, we've been talking about a clear example that would work. So if it's all hands on deck, I challenge everybody out there, developer, bankers, and politicians, to step up to the plate and let's put this thing to
work. The problem is with the bankers that Canada's history, the bankers have never been in the red. And they might actually be tickling the red with the upcoming year. And
let me just throw this out. That 9-story render that you saw, it produces $1 million a year in net cash flow after expenses and debt service. We don't got a dime of that. You know, that's for the community programs, all the rest of it. And if they want a deeper discount, the rents, you know, so that more people can come into the building, that's up to them. But the facilities are there, that, you know, from the cash flow that they get. 12 months, you know, 12 months and that's 7. Each of these is 400 units, basically. You know, so, and we're not even marketing this thing yet. You know, that's just all us approaching churches that, you know, we know, et cetera. You know?
We need a spectrum of different residential dwellings. And this concept, it tickles a lot of different of possible avenues. And two words to explain it. It's a no-brainer. I just don't understand why there wouldn't be a long lineup of people saying, yeah, I want to do at least one of them.
It's not there yet, though. That's what I'm saying. You know, like COVID, we pulled back. You know, it was just nuts to put it out. So it's now, you know, starting to really get out there.
I just want to clarify the comment. It's not as if I'm not saying that they have not expressed interest. But once it does go out, I'd be surprised if it doesn't get, at the very least, some interest.
You're absolutely right.
I think there's two issues at hand here when it comes to the status quo, where it's not profitable enough. In their eyes, I'm saying. It's not profitable enough, and the profit is not going into their pocket.
Right. And I won't deal with anybody that if they want to do a Joy building, they say they love it, I won't deal with them if they say they want it for themselves, for the profit it produces that I just described.
Yeah.
I won't touch it. And that's not going to change.
And it shouldn't.
Now that's a level of integrity that needs to come back in our industry.
Yeah, but it's difficult, right? Because the industry...
It's difficult, but not impossible.
A lot of people making money in development, right? In Canada, especially in Ontario, specifically
again,
Toronto.
What's been explained here today, among other concepts that we've covered on your show, is not meant for everybody. We got to be very cognizant of that.
Is it going to take the population to be a greater portion to understand this is where they're going to end up? Like, is it going to take the Gen Z or whatever, millennials, to actually get to that point where they're like, well, I don't want to be in what the standard is. I want to be in a Joy concept. That's what I want to be in. So is it going to take them to rally behind the older generation today?
Well, right now, as it stands, if you drive around across Canada and you look in, even into our neighbors to the south in the United States, there's enough reason. And they might not all be elderly. There are some elderly, more than likely. From what I'm seeing, it's a younger demographic. But look at the amount of people that are living outside in a tent under an overpass.
It's brutal. Like, it's absolutely brutal, right? But you also know that younger generation, they've honestly convinced themselves that they will never be able to own a home.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're not even getting into the starting point.
Yeah, we're having
to get this.
We're now having even mayors trying to convince their population. The mayor of Calgary just came out last week, attempting to convince who was listening that the majority of people don't want to be bothered with home ownership, and that there is much more freedom in rental. Yeah, that's just, I'm paraphrasing. I'll send you the post.
I've been seeing some TikTok social media posts about the positive aspects of rental and at younger ages. And I'm like, there aren't any. I'm sorry, but there aren't any. Yeah, and I just look at this kind of stuff as, okay, block. I'm not interested in this conversation. It's not really moving this country forward.
You do it because you have to.
Yeah. You're being forced to rent. That's what it is. Right. But I think it's human nature to get out of that first box and get your own box. And you want to own that box.
That's why I'm dead against the REITs and hedge funds buying these thousands of homes.
Thank you.
Because they're robbing 100%. The young generation from their biggest wealth builder. You know, and that effect on the economy is yet to be told.
Am I stupid to say that obviously the budget that was released recently for the June 25th deadline regarding the capital gains, right? A lot of people in the industry, whether you're a real estate broker, mortgage, what have you, contractor, developer, they were all saying it's a benefit. There's a positive here because you're going to stop. You're going to slow down foreign investment buying, right?
And well, they've prohibited that anyway.
Yeah. But the thing is, why don't you just outlaw the fact that if you're a foreigner and you have not been living in this country for less than 5 years and you're not a Canadian citizen, you cannot buy a property here. Wouldn't that be a better solution to that? I'm not a politician.
Yeah, well, getting the investors, yes, getting the investors out of the market, it's too late. You know, I mean,
it's never too late. You can always change rules because you just presented a budget that increased capital gains by 13%. So apparently, if you're a politician, you can change anything you want. If I feel like wearing yellow today, I'll wear yellow. If I want to wear red tomorrow, I'll wear red.
It's actually 16.7% or 666.
The insanity behind it. That's the sad thing, right? So they can wake up one day and just change things, right? It's just, and if they really wanted to, those 10 cities, they could change that. They could fix it if they really wanted to, but they don't want to. That's where it's an uphill. I love this, Ian, honestly. I love this. Okay. And I definitely think we need this. I think every city across Canada needs this, right? And then I don't know about the States as much, but I'm a Canadian, I'm Portuguese, so then I have a loyalty towards this, right? But I go against, there's a lot of people making a lot of serious money by not doing the right things. And how can you fight that battle? Like, that's a difficult battle. You can fight it, but it's difficult.
That's why this, you know, if anything, it helps the nonprofits and faith-based groups get the leg up. And, you know, I mean, they were decimated in COVID, you know, with offerings dropping off the cliff and that. So this takes care of all of that permanently, you know, and so.
And it also maintains faith in the community, right? Because if we start losing our churches and our mosques and et cetera.
Do you still see a community in Canada?
Straight up question.
Definition of what you thought community was.
No.
Like you said, like, I mean, just for me, a community is that if you were to walk around in any part of the country and not have a worry about anything negative happen. That's not today.
I'll give you two examples. One is I use public transportation when I'm in the city a lot, as much as possible. And that's not a plug. I'm just as storytelling. Yeah. And I keep my back against the wall and I position myself in a place where I keep my eyes open. If I have my buds on, which typically when I'm traveling in the city, I have my buds on, my music's on pause. I'm keeping my eyes open and it's peeled because of all of the stories that are happening. And also because of the things that I've seen happen in front of me. I've witnessed some pretty crazy stuff, right? And the second one is, as it relates to community, I want to quickly pull back to what's happening in the city, these transit-oriented density efforts and programs that are being put in place. These towers are way too tall, way too many people, with zero sense of community, not even sense, zero right, feeling right, of community right. in it. And that's going to be a major problem because that's going to start messing with people's heads.
I agree with you 100%.
So,
and this brings back a sense of community.
Yeah, and, right? and I have a huge bone to pick. I mean, listen, I know as a metropolis of Toronto, we can't, you know, we must not think that's going to be white picket fence on every street corner. We can't start stacking people on top of each other like that because it's going to come back and bite us. I don't care what anybody else thinks. That's what I'm digging my heels in the ground. And if people don't believe me, I will challenge them to go live in a condo for a year. And also what I'd like to know is a lot of the people that are putting these efforts together is, do they actually live in the condo themselves?
No, of course not. Of course not.
They don't need to answer that question. I already know what the answer is.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is that the ADU luxury market that I mentioned earlier, it's being designed by people that don't live in those units.
Even luxury affordable housing, like the whole...
That's an oxymoron.
I don't understand that, but that's being used.
It's, yeah, but because the world is a marketing ploy, or just marketing in general, live, and it's constantly evolving. Everybody's messing with your head. At any given point, they're trying to get your attention.
Yeah.
So a play on words, obviously, is something on how you get influence and persuasion. That's all what it is. They're just a play on words.
So your son is right behind working on it as well?
Yeah.
How old is he?
42.
Okay.
43.
Well, I wish you all the best.
Well, thank you. Well, next up, tomorrow, I'll be at the affordable living panel or whatever it is with the...
The Sustainability Symposium?
School of Cities is putting on
tomorrow. Oh, nice.
Wait a minute, is this at the Mill Street?
Which?
The Mill Street in the distillery?
No.
Oh, guys, that's where I'll be tomorrow. Yeah, so I got invited to that. Sustainability of... I think it's a Sustainability Symposium or Affordability Symposium. Yeah,
everybody's looking for an answer. And then in May, I'll be one of the speakers at this big summit.
I just connected him with Sean Allen. So he and Sean he's going to have Sean on his program.
That's on
to
May
talk
24th or?
That's right. 24th to 26th.
It's 3 days. Yeah. University of Toronto, Scarborough. Yeah, I'll be there for 2 of the days.
Nice. Okay, we got to look at, I got the 12 questions that I want to ask. You've never done them, eh?
No.
No. Actually, hang on a second.
Do Ian today.
We could do both you guys. It's fine.
No. I'd rather wait because I've got a few questions afterwards I want to ask.
What do you mean?
What?
On the show?
Retract the questions. I prefer to wait on the 12 questions.
No problem. All right. So thanks so much, Ian. Appreciate your time coming in and taking the time. And I love what you're doing with this. It's amazing.
Thank you.
And I can only imagine the team that's working on it is just as good, right?
We've got a team of about 15 that are all just at various stages of me waiting to pull the lever, you know. And we're leaning modular, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And how's the construction force? Because I can only assume that you're getting rallied by the actual tradespeople.
It's too premature. You know, like...
Are they getting wind of it yet?
No.
Well, now they're going to get wind of it.
Good. because again, you know, we were our own CM, so we'd be putting stuff out for bid, but not for about 12 months.
Okay.
You know, we know that we're getting a problem.
Well, 12 months sometimes in construction is kind of like the Einstein theory of put your hand on a burner, right?
Yeah.
Ian Jones, BGI Group, www.bgigroup.ca. You can reach him at ian@bgigroup.ca, and also with this website here, www.myjoyliving.com. And you can also find him on LinkedIn, so connect with him on LinkedIn. Here's the 12 questions of construction. What is your favorite construction word?
Word. Respect. And now I've got nothing but respect for the trades.
Least favorite tool?
Probably the hammer, because I don't know how to drive a nail in straight. I know how to get it driven in straight. But I don't know.
What construction sound do you love?
Probably a pile driver.
It's repetitive.
Yeah, but it's, you know, you're driving down to, you know, the founding elevations or something that's going to live for a long time, so... That gets around the rotten soils where, you know.
I remember the first time I ever saw it, I was always trying to look for the magnetic plumb that was on the side of it to just make sure that they're piling it correctly straight down, right?
Let me just quickly tell you. We did the Prince Hotel at York Mills in 1972.
Okay.
And that tower there is sitting on top of 150 piles. And back then, Tro, the inspection engineer... they had to inspect the base of those holes.
How did they get there?
A rope around his ankle with the miner's light. I'm telling you, these were 3 feet. And they lowered them down, every one of those. I mean,
what kind of knot did they throw around his ankles?
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it's, and he had to go down and make sure it hadn't caved in. You know, the base of, so that the concrete could be get poured.
Did any of them cave in or no? Probably not.
I don't remember. They
probably compacted well.
Yeah, I don't remember.
That would have been an interesting job, man.
I'll say.
Try to sell that one to the Health and Safety Association.
They don't need to know. What is your favorite beverage?
Oolong tea. I've had two cups of that for at least 10 or 15 years, and hopefully that's what's keeping me going.
Nice. What turns you on and off in construction?
The substructure, you know, like whether it's three or four basement, you know, levels, because once you get up there, the Hilton downtown was, I think, 40 floors, but frankly, I find it boring. You know, because if it's Tuesday, it must be the 32nd floor we're pouring today, or is it the 33rd? So
it's the same thing over and over. Exactly. Versus the foundation has so much interesting components.
I guess the guys these days say, there's another million, there's another million.
That's how they look at it. Two different ways of looking at things. That's off, but what do you find? What turns you on in construction? The foundation you said. What turns you off? I guess the upper floors.
Leans.
Yeah, okay.
Leans.
Part of construction. Favorite curse word?
I don't.
You don't curse at all?
No. Nope.
You don't have to. What's your favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
Okay, Maserati.
Quadrofino?
Eh?
Quadrofino?
No, the Ghibli.
What do you miss from your childhood?
Oh boy, innocence.
Yeah. Ah, well said.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
None, honestly, because... To me, a chartered quantity surveyor is the best background to become a developer, you know, because it's basically start to finish, you know, and, you know, so, and watching the dollars and schedule and everything, which you have to. We've never had a corporate or personal bankruptcy, and that's what I give the credit to.
You know? It's true, very much.
That's one area that, if ever you would want to, that I would encourage be unpacked a little bit more.
Of course. Because what profession would you not like to do?
I've never thought of doing anything else. I'm probably a police officer. You know, it's really great what they do, but, you know, there's so much high risk and so much they have to put up with these days. Mm-hmm. You know, the lip and all the rest of it. So,
last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Well, what he is in the Bible is say, well done, thou good and faithful servant.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'd like to hear.
Nice. Thanks very much, Ian. I really appreciate it. And thanks so much. I'm looking for setting this up.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm really grateful.
Yeah, that was great. Really good.
Okay. I think we covered quite a bit, and anybody's interested, they can reach out to you and have a conversation.
Sure.
Yeah. Maybe there's someone listening who's got got a big fat wallet.
may I just add one thing?
Sure.
I mentioned earlier how the internet's permanent. So by virtue of it, I want to take advantage of thanking you for your friendship, your support, your generosity with your knowledge, experience, and wisdom. And unbeknownst to you, thank you for your mentorship. I'm really immensely grateful for you, Ian. Thank
you're welcome. You're welcome. Glad to. Yeah. And anybody that asks on LinkedIn, I just say, well, here's what you got to do. Go on, answer these 10 questions that I've put, and then I'll set up an hour to go over them with you.
You're a gem, my friend. Thank you.
I actually like that. So you're asking people to answer the questions first before they...
Yeah.
I like that. That's kind of smart.
You got to weed them out. You know, many people, I'd love to be a developer.
Got to earn the master key, right?
Well, you got to be like, are we on the same page, right? Like, basically, you have to figure this out. Otherwise, you're just being bombarded by a bunch of people.
Well, on Quora, I've answered about 200 development questions in construction. And that's what I say to them. You know, read my answers, and if there's any 10 that you want additional information on, list them and add 5 of your own. Send them to me, and I'll review them, and we'll set up a 1-hour Zoom.
That's how it started with you.
No, actually, no? we just connected, and it just, if I may, it just blossomed naturally, organically.
Yeah.
And the food.
And the food.
Thank you, gentlemen. Really appreciate your time being on the show.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We're out of here.